everybody.
Hey, Alex.
Yeah, so I just found out I was gonna speak tonight a couple hours ago, which is cool. I haven't told my story in like a couple months, for a while I was telling it like every week, week after week at a detox. And I kind of missed doing that, so, we'll see what happens tonight. I'm actually a 100 member, 164. I'm rarely at this group of meetings, but I'm usually here on Tuesday night. I mean, shortly after I started working my first sponsor, and he dragged me to his group, and it's true to my heart because it's the first place I started hearing about like people actually like getting into this book. I'm sure I'd heard about it before, but it was the first time my ears could actually like, process it. There's a way to work these steps and like recover and not to be like victims of alcoholism for the rest of their life. And that was like a totally different message than I'd heard before. Let's see, over like 4.5 years now. August 11th, I'll have 5 years. And it was a struggle to actually get into rooms. And I went to meetings for like 6 months, and then I was a student for 3 months. I went to Happy House, and here I was like drinking and losing off and on. But I guess I'll start at the beginning. This was the first time I ever had a drink, which I did not get drunk. But I talked about it because, I was like 4 or 5. I had this idea in my head that alcohol is cool. Alcohol is like what adults do. My dad drinks, I want to be more like my dad, I want to be a man, and I'm like four. So the first time I drank, like, I don't know, it was like a sip or two, but I already like thought this is what I want to do. And then from that age on, every time I could get a few sips of alcohol, whether it was like on the 4th of July, at church, wherever, I was pulling up people's pants or trying to get, growing up, I always wanted to be like my dad. My dad, he was always like in school. He went to art school for a while, and then he switched over and went to medical school. I always wanted to be closer to him. And it's funny, my childhood was like, when I told my story the first time, I don't know how much time I had, but I told my story to me, and I got up at the podium, and I spoke for like, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and halfway through that period of time, I was talking about like my childhood and how horrible it was, and I started crying, and I think we cried the rest of the meeting. And the funny thing about AA is like the more you cry, the more people feel sorry for you and pass them back and tell you how awesome you are. Basically my first like year and a half of the evening, but I raised my hand, saying an alcoholic, and I was in the emotional wreck. My childhood I always thought was like horrible, like the only things I can remember were my resentments and how pissed off I was at my parents. But after being in the program for a while and like doing tons of staff work and inventory and stuff, what I realized is, my parents weren't perfect, but here it is. And there was something more important. Like there was love in my house, that I didn't even realize. I'm funny like that. It's like if you don't love me, I'll get pissed off because you don't love me. If you love me, I get pissed off because you love me too much. It's like I'm never satisfied. And that started for me like very early. I got pissed off at my parents for crazy stuff, like having a little brother, and I got pissed off when he was born. It was something that was taken off of me. It sounds funny and ridiculous, but those were like resentments that I held on for years. I'm not good enough, you have another child, so you got it, and I think I was like, I was like 5 when he was born. In school, growing up, like, I was in, like, the gifted classes, honors classes, but I was also in the SLD classes, so I was in, like, the smaller classes with the kids that were, like, doing really bad, and then the small classes with the kids that were doing really good, and I felt, like, really conflicted. I knew I didn't fit in with either group, but I didn't know why I was in this side. But that being said, I did good in school. Growing up, I had tons of friends. But I still didn't feel like a part of it. I felt different. I felt like somebody had some structures to life that I didn't have. I thought everybody could see through me and see on the inside and see what a scared little boy I was. But I was always trying to remember lying, once my parents got home, I remember lying about, like, why I was committing a crime or something bad. And just for years, my mom remembers that as me being sick from, like, food poisoning. And every time she, you know, I just, like, think to myself, no, that's not what happened. And then, like, after that, you know, there were no consequences of that, that night. No police got called, nobody, like, got hurt, nobody got in trouble, no boyfriend, girlfriend, you're broken up, nothing like that. It was just crazy, and then from then on, like, anytime I could, like, I'd steal as much alcohol from my parents as I could, like, so I'd, like, mix, like, you know, the whiskey and the vodka, and put it all together in one thing, and, you know, bring it over to my friend's house and drink it on the weekend. It's really just stuff that I could do. And again, like, nothing bad was happening. I'm just curious, real quick, in my house, like, you know, the big kind of higher power is all of it, and all of the support for me to mention it. What I do, like, is, you know, searching God and stuff, and what I don't know what my parents told me, I know what I heard. I heard my parents say that, this is what I heard. I heard my parents say, you know, some people believe in God, some people don't, if you don't want to, that's cool. And, I think at one point, like, I believed in, like, the mystery of nature, or some type of higher power, or something, that you can probably have all these resentments that were, like, growing and growing. I figured I was scared and stuff, so I couldn't be any type of order, or God, or higher power, or whatever. So I just, I thought it was really fucking smart, so I'm probably gonna be pushing into this game and follow it, I thought it was really smart, and I thought, like, the more and more I thought about stuff, the more powerful I thought, and the less chance that there could be anything else. You know, for most of my life, I picked my problems by, like, pure willpower and, like, you know, thinking and asking and, like, trying to figure stuff out and then, you know, directing myself. And that's, you know, my, that's what I did for a long time. So, you know, in high school, I started doing a ton of drugs. That's just part of the story. If I would have known I was coming to alcoholics and I'm just really getting drunk, I don't know. But, you know, the same thing with the alcohol when I was little, and I was doing drugs in high school. There were no consequences. Like, I don't really remember any of my friends. I mean, somebody would get, like, you know, suspended from school, or, you know, just little things. Or they just get away from their gun or something. But I didn't get in trouble. Like, my parents didn't, you know, find stuff in their cell. It didn't happen. My grades didn't suffer. My social life increased. So I thought partying was, like, my answer to all my life problems. I felt like I looked on the outside. I felt a very feeling of confidence appeared on the inside. And I remember, like, partying every weekend. When I was in, like, high school, there was this weird thing where I would party on the weekend, and I'd get, like, this. I get filled with whatever, like, I needed to get filled with, like, that was missing from me, and I'd boss, like, a week. And I'd have this, like, weird afterglow, like, I, you know, I party last week, and now I'm fine for this week, and I can go, like, stay at school, and stay with my parents, and stay with my family. But as the time went on, that afterglow was shortened, and then I started to, like, you know, drink on Wednesday instead of waiting until Saturday. By the time I, you know, I was in middle of high school, I was drinking every day. It wasn't a lot, but I was drinking every day, because that's what I did. And then, I got out of high school with a college scholarship, which I lost. I just didn't see the consequences. You know, there was a lot of fun times started seeing how much countries in other people's lives. I didn't really see it in mine, but really like but I started having friends that were getting arrested and being on probation. Some of those friends on probation, neither were gonna have drug tests and alcohol tests. They neither were coming up and they were still drinking. And it blew my mind. I just think it's like two idiots. You know, they know they're gonna have a drug test and they still how foolish can you be? And I didn't realize that later on that was gonna happen to me. You know, I just didn't feel it. I wasn't my first after I'm done, I'm like, yeah, I'm in school, and I'm supposed to be out of community college in 2 years, and after like 4 or 5 years, they just stopped asking me what I was doing, because every time I would say it's doing school. And I also found out something else that those things in parties, and a lot of times at those parties, I wanted to say I wouldn't drink, because I knew if I started drinking, I didn't know how much I was going to drink. So it was actually easier for me to put off drinking for a couple of hours, but leave the party early than start and I'm there before myself. And I just thought I was being smart and figured out a way not to get in trouble and drink. But I didn't realize that most people don't do that. You know, most people, you know, either go to a family function and enjoy themselves and drink, or they go to a family function and enjoy themselves and not drink. You know, and I could. You know what else? Yeah, so, I mean, my whole world is just getting smaller and smaller. I haven't really talked to anybody that I went to high school with. All the people I was hanging out with weren't really friends or people I drank with. And my idea of a good night was to have like a small group of people over at my house, and I feel as drunk as quick as I could. My house is like the party spot. We had a couple car wrecks on my street because of people leaving my house and coming to it. And I just, you know, that was just like standard practice. I remember like learning to drink alcohol that no one else liked. So that I had to make sure that I had alcohol in my house. And I started drinking again because none of my friends drank it. And I'd leave it in the fridge and I know it'd be there so I can protect it when I got back. Because for me, the worst thing to do would be to run out in the middle of the night, you know, I needed that. At that time, I felt safer to that stand in the liquor store, you know, because I just didn't want anything to do. That's when I felt safe. Then I got into, opiates and benzos, and I did that for a long time. I'm not going to go into all of that, but it's part of what brought me to the gym. I did that for a while, and basically, when stuff got worse, basically, I'm still like, I'm not doing stuff now, but I'm still like a fake student, still not working. Like, this has like gone on for like years and years and years. I basically don't do anything except try to study and fall asleep. And that was kind of it. So my family wanted me to go to the meetings. So I go to meetings, and I'm like, I go to meetings, but I got there the first time. And I wanted to raise my hand and be like, my name's Alex, I'm an alcoholic, and I expected you guys to like lay me down on these tables and put hands on me and say, you're here mom was like drugs or alcohol, but I knew there was something going on. And I was also like getting into like these strange like philosophies and like I found this philosophy, and I thought I found it the best in the world because in some of the literature it talks about, you know, indulgence instead of action. It talks about my will be done. And it's like it's so funny because it's like the exact opposite of what like people in the room. And of course I found it. So I tried to live up to that and that didn't work. You know, the book talks about kind of live by philosophies and stuff, and I tried that. So I was going to meetings and I was like texting dealers while I'm in the meeting. I was like hitting liquor stores on the way back. I did that for like 6 months. And I'd gotten a job, I was working for a little while, and I took a job because it was giving away my drinking. Because there had been a shift in my drinking and using. For most of my life, I'd been like a daily drinker. I'd always, you know, drank pretty much every day. But by the end, I couldn't drink every day because people were watching me. I couldn't drink every day because it cost too much because I was doing other stuff when I drank. So I was like drinking, you know, a couple times a month. That's what I was, you know, I was doing that. And so I was drinking a lot less often, but I was getting in way more trouble. I remember sitting in a car wreck on the way to work one day. And I still was there. I didn't exactly know where I was. I was in Florida. I was sitting there thinking, just don't talk unless you talk to it and be quiet. And somehow I got out of that, you know? I quit my job. And I was in like November. And a little bit after, like a day or two after Christmas, I started drinking so I could get ready for New Year's. Because by that time, for me to get to that oblivion place, that place where I felt safe, because I didn't feel safe when I got into just a little buzz on, I wanted to be like a walking zombie. Because, I was like in terror most of the time. I wasn't completely, you know, completely blacked out. I was in terror when I woke up in the morning, I was in terror if I didn't pass out at night. You know, and even when I dreamed, it wasn't like, when I was sleeping, I was like having nightmares. So like every part of my existence that I was conscious of was like tortured. And the only time I felt okay with myself is when I wasn't there, when I was gonna black out. So I was like working myself up to that so I could be ready for New Year's and, you know, bring the new year in with a, you know, with a bang or whatever. And this was 07, going into 08. And I missed the mark and got day fractured on the 28th. I don't know exactly what happened. I just know, like, I know I was threatening to tell my mom and tell myself, and the cops came, and they deemed it necessary to face that. And so they took me to St. Joe's, and it was so funny because I got to St. Joe's, and I was thinking, you know what, this must be the bottom everyone talks about. This one must be, like, the worst thing. I was trying to tell myself and my mother, and I'm never going to drink again, I'm never going to use drugs again, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't even 24 hours later where I was starting to think, well, you know, maybe if my mom hadn't said what she said, this wouldn't happen. Or maybe if I would have, like, smoked this before I drank that, this wouldn't have happened. And, you know, it only took, like, less than 24 hours for me to, like, start protecting beers. And being like, you know, it's not the alcohol's fault, it's somebody else's. You know, it's the cop's fault that they dragged me, and he didn't know what he was doing. You know, so... basically, my family gave me an ultimatum. They said, either, you know, go to treatment or, you know, go live out on the street. And I would have been living on the street because I didn't have any friends. I had people I, you know, drank with. And if I didn't have money, they weren't going to put up with me. And if they didn't have money, I wouldn't put up with them. So I went to treatment. And it's funny, they do like this questionnaire. They need us in treatment. And it's like, they give you a questionnaire where they ask you, like, every single drug you've ever done throughout your whole life and how often you've done them and blah, 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 blah. And at the end, you know, and they have all these other questions. And at the end, they ask me if you have any questions. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I want to quit drugs and I want to stop drinking. How's that going to work out for the recovery time you guys got? And the guy laughed on the phone and said, just worry about that. You know, talk to somebody when you get here. And we got to recognize and say, like, how confused I still was and how... You know, I just thought I could manage my drinking, I thought I could control it. So I get to treatment, and the only thing I knew about treatment was that I tight rope, you know, emotional work, and had good sticks, everything under the sun, and it was really awesome to train. And they took us to meet, we had to go on meeting every day, so they took us on the little band, took us to meetings, and, you know, like, I wanted to stay sober, but I didn't want to stay sober. You know, I wanted to be honest, but I didn't want to be honest. And so I get out of treatment, and I followed all the directions they gave me in treatment. You know, they told me, go to halfway house, I went to halfway house. They told me to go to therapist once every week, you know, that therapist once a week. They told me to go to outpatient care, I did that. They probably told me to make that. It was just like pretty much everything they told me to do. And within my teeth, I was drinking and all those other things. And I knew I was going to have a drug test at the halfway house. I knew I was going to have a drug test at the outpatient care, and I still did it. And every 90-year-old my friends were like, doing the same thing. I thought they were like complete idiots. So it was like kind of bad for them at times. Because I thought after like 3 months of not drinking and not using like all the stuff had been taken out of my body, and I'd done all this emotional work, and now I should be able to drink on the weekend, or, you know, like do something on New Year's or whatever. And, you know, I started drinking, and, you know, within a week, I'm like living in a halfway house, and the guy nodding out on the couch. And I still had to go to meetings because I was living at the halfway house. They tried to kick me out of halfway house, but I lied, and everyone voted, and said I could stay, and then the next day I came clean. You know, I didn't get money. I have this, like, tendency of beating against the system, but not beating the symptoms. You know, like, I knew I was wrong. It was just like when I was at state college, you know. It was like, just like when I was in state all the other times. I could get away with it, but it was like killing me on the inside. So I stayed at the halfway house for like 2 months, something like that. And the halfway house I was at, there was like 18 guys, something like that. And most of them were guys that I'd gone to treatment with. So I had seen them come into treatment, all busted up and bruised and puking and all that good stuff. And I saw them get better before my eyes. Like, I knew they were the real deal. I knew they weren't like some dude that raised their hand at me and said, oh, I got 20 years, I've never changed anything, I can't do it. But I'd seen these guys, you know, look horrible in front of me, get better, they're not drinking, they're like starting to be happy on a regular basis, and I'm, you know, asleep on the couch at the halfway house. And you know, like, crazy things happened to me. I felt like crap, and you know, I was sitting around somebody, and it was just, like, I was thinking, like, why isn't that me? So eventually I got kindly asked to leave the halfway house, and basically all I had was like a car, and I don't think I had a cell phone. I still can't remember if I had a cell phone when I left, but, and I could have done a lot of things. I could have, like, tried to get into, you know, some treatment, or I could have tried to get into Salvation Army. I could have gone to a meeting. I could have called, you know, a number. I have, like, a million numbers at that time. I could have gone to a lot of meetings. I could have done, like, something, you know, like the next right thing. But to me, the best idea I could think, because I still wanted to drink, I still wanted to live, I still wanted to do everything I've been doing, was to find my buddy that was, I was, like, 27, 28 at the time, and my buddy was probably like 22 or something. And he had already spent like a year living off and on in the woods, not working and staying drunk. And I figured if anybody can show me how to do this thing, he can. So I got like my drinking sponsor, my living in the woods and drinking sponsor guy. I hunted him down that day, I found him, and he showed me the ropes. So he showed me how to panhandle at Industry. And this wasn't just any industry, this was my neighborhood industry. This was the industry I've been shopping at like for 20 years. You know, and instead of shopping, I'm out there, you know, asking for money. It's the middle of it. It's like the middle of July? Yeah, it's like this isn't like the end of July. It's sort of like freaking hot, it was torture. So that night, we go, I think you guys know what nice torture is. We go out behind the air. You know, we're doing all types of stuff, but we're doing all types of stuff, and my buddy doesn't even know who I am. He's actually in my name, and I'm just messing with him, because I've done everything he's done, I've done the same amount, and I'm not getting into that oblivion phase. I'm just, like, being miserable, and you know, just not working. There were a couple of thoughts running through my head that night. You know, there was this one thought of, like, it's never going to be enough. It's never going to be enough. Alcohol is never going to be enough drugs. else going on here. There's like something inside me, you know, there's this hole in my soul which is inside me. And then there was this other string of thoughts that the end was coming to me. And I didn't know what the end was. And I didn't know if the end was me like going back to a psych ward. I didn't know if the end was me going back to treatment. You know, I didn't know if the end was me getting arrested. I didn't know if the end was me killing myself. I didn't know if the end was me, you know, recovering. And all of those options terrified the hell out of me. Like, I didn't want any of them. You know, I didn't want to live, I didn't want to die, I didn't want to drink, I didn't want to master anything. It was just like torture. And I wasn't a lot of time with or me, for that matter, but it was like the end was coming. You know, I knew something was starting to like, something was starting to happen. And so the next day, I was on my way back to my mom's house. And I wanted to like get better, but I still wanted to do everything on my own. And I had been in enough meetings where I kind of knew and you'd get a sponsor, you'd go to meetings, work to stuff. But my idea to get sober still was, let me move my buddies from the woods into my mom's house, and our recovery program is going to be based on playing video games and watching Netflix for the rest of our lives. And that was just like what I thought was going to work. And that, I learned something from that. I didn't do that for like a month or whatever. I learned that I can be like completely miserable when I'm sober if I don't have like a spiritual program, if I'm not working with stuff. So we tried that for a while, and just sort of happened to me. That's a miracle. Me and my buddy were talking, we had no money, we had nothing, we couldn't get anything. You know, he wanted to try to stay sober. You know, his father was like, hey, they have these daily meetings. He had never been to one. He's like, they don't work for me, maybe they'll work for you. And I just check it out. And I was like, yeah. So we get there, and I was sitting in this meeting, and we started going to like two times a night, because there was a meeting at 7 and a meeting at 8:30, and we just hung out, and you know, I've been to like well over 100 meetings, not like 100 meetings, a lot of meetings at that point. And I've heard like the basic lines that you hear at every meeting, stuff sounded different. You know, stuff started to make sense. I was like looking at people, and I'm, you know, just completely baffled at how they're staying sober and how like people are staying happy. And you know, I was scared because I knew I was gonna drink again. You know, I knew it was just a matter of time. You know, I was just like putting it off, but I knew that dance was gonna start all over again. You know, my buddy, he didn't hear anything that interests him. Last thing I heard is he was in New York shooting heroin, and that was a number of years ago. So I don't know, you know, if he's in prison, if he's dead, if he's, you know, forgotten to recover. I just don't know. But it's funny because, you know, I got there by thinking that it wasn't gonna work for me. And for some reason, I stuck it around. So I'm sticking around myself. Man, I do everything crap, but, you know. Not the way it's still. So I stuck around, I didn't want to get a sponsor, so I'm just going to meetings, I'm not sharing, and I'm staying miserable. And I did that for like a month or two. And at one meeting, I heard this guy speak, and I had nothing in common with him. You know, he was like older, and he had like played on his sport in high school, and then he was in the military, had kids, he was married, he was divorced, and blah, 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 all these things that were different. But I identified with like the alcoholism. You know, I identified with the you know, at first, he was mostly all awesome and fun and the best thing ever. And then over the years, it got worse and worse. And then once he wanted to quit, he couldn't quit. And didn't understand why. You know, and then he started talking about the steps and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I left that meeting and think, I'm like, okay, I'm just cool for it, whatever. But later, like a month later, it was Christmas Eve. And something was going on in the house that I thought was like the end of the world, and I was going to have to drink over, and blah, blah, blah. And I go up to this meeting that was having an outfit on because of the holidays. So I knew there was going to be somebody up there. And that guy was up there, and I talked to him for a while, and I cried, like I always did that day. And, you know, he told me some stuff. He said, first of all, he said he was going to be my sponsor. He said I had plenty of people do it before, and I knew how to play that game. You know, say, oh, okay, and take the number. You maybe call him once or twice, once they like tell you to do something like read the book, and just get a new one. He told me he was going to be my sponsor, and he told me some shit that I hadn't heard before. Or like, maybe it had been said to me before, but I didn't hear it. You know, he talked about like working these steps and getting I could, like, enter the stream of life and, like, help other people. Like, I thought the steps were, like, Mount Everest and that I was never going to finish them. And if I did, I'd be, like, when I was 16 and I'd be, like, the day before. And, you know, I just had, like, this crazy thought. You know, he told me that we do recover. And it doesn't mean I'm going to be cured, but it means that I can wake up in the morning and, you know, instead of thinking about not drinking, I can think about, like, oh, I'm going to pray. Oh, I'm going to call somebody. Oh, I'm going to help somebody. You know, like, just, like, instead of constantly fighting the drink. And he told me to read pages 84 to 88 in the big book that night. You read in the morning, and you read it at the next night, and the next morning, and so on and so forth. And he told me to call him the next day. So, the next day is Christmas. And I love excuses. And if there's a pass on anything, it's on Christmas. You know, I figure, I don't need to call this guy. It's Christmas. They can say, I'm busy, he's busy, and I don't think I don't think I'm good enough. But I called him that day on Christmas, and we had a short conversation. It's not like he said some magical, like, whisper in my ear and I was sick, and he was just like, hey, what's up? You know, I told him I read that stuff, and, you know, have a great Christmas. And it was, like, a really short conversation. But it was the beginning of, like, a relationship, you know, and we started going to meetings basically, like, every day together, because he didn't have a car. We started going through the big book. Started reading from, like, the cover, you know, from the title page, through the preface, through the forward, you know, and just started reading the book, and we talked about it, and he had never taken anybody through the steps. He had tried, but he had never, like, actually taken anybody all the way through the steps. He had, like, I don't know, like, a year and a half, maybe a little bit less, so he was no, like, age or guru or anything like that. He was just too drunk, so we're trying to get better, going through this process. And before I knew it, I was writing my fourth step. You know, I had been told to write my fourth step by a sponsor before, and, you know, I promptly got a new sponsor. And before I knew it, I was like, he told me on the fourth step, he told me, I think he wanted me to do it in like 2 weeks, and that took a month. And I put myself through a lot of torture doing that fourth step that didn't need to happen. And it was because I wasn't relying on the first step. I hadn't really done that. When I talked about, like, turning our will and our life over to care of God, I heard alcohol and drugs over to care of God, and I was going to teach everything else. So when I went to, like, write that fourth step, I was trying to do it on my own without the help of a higher power. That's another thing. I wish I had more time. That's another thing. I was violently anti-religious, violently, like, anti-God and all that type of stuff when I got here. And in the beginning, you know, every morning I woke up and I wanted to drink. You know, all throughout the day I wanted to drink, and at night I wanted to drink. And what I started doing, it wasn't an idea of mine, but, like, what people told me to do is pray in the morning. And I would pray with my own prayer every day, because it was only prayer I was uncomfortable with. You know, I would say that prayer to her, like, over and over again in the morning, and just hoping for, like, a break in your session, you know. And I started to get, like, relief for, like, a minute at a time. And that's, you know, that's really, like, how I started praying, and that's how I, like, did drink in the beginning. It's just, like, sustaining that drink for over and over again. I would dream about drinking, I would wake up wanting to drink, you know, it was just, like, but yeah, I got to that fourth step, and I had to relook at the third step. When I actually wrote my fourth step, I sat down like twice and just busted it out. You know, we followed the directions in the book. It was nothing fancy. It was exactly what's in the book. And I did my fifth step on Valentine's Day of, which would have been 2009. Yeah. And I thought after I did my fifth step, I was going to get this emotional rash and, like, have to, like, sleep for 5 days and, you know, I don't know. But I went to, like, a Valentine's Day dance that night, you know, because I felt some freedom, you know. And, you know, I took a while, so before I knew I was raising my hand to sponsor guys, right? Because it was shortly after that that I decided to raise my hand to sponsor guys. And I didn't want to do that, you know. I thought, I've been hanging out with, like, most of the people that, like, had a certain amount of time, you know, like, I'm trying to hang out with the winners or whatever. You know, people are kind of like, all I do is take him to the book. And if I'm like, if I'm present while I'm taking him to the invite, you know, God or higher power, whoever you're doing it, and follow the directions, the stuff works out. You know, especially if the other guy's willing. And part of the way I knew that was because my sponsor hadn't taken anyone else to the staff before, and it worked with us. So I sponsored a number of guys, and a lot of guys I was like, you know, would read like a little bit of a book, and read like the preface and two forwards, and they disappear. But you know, some of the guys stuck. Each time I read that stuff, and each time I shared my experience with it, I had a new experience of how, you know, powerless I am with alcohol, how my life is manageable. And then when I get to the next part of it, next step, and even if the guy didn't stick around to the step after that, I was having a new experience with it. I guess we can talk about service a little too. So I remember when I was like first started working on my sponsor, he took me to down to the district, and I don't know if any of you guys have been down the district. I was like, it's where all the representatives from different groups meet, and I was just like a fish out of water, it's freaking out. But I didn't do that for a while after that, but I did get involved. I got a home group, and I got like a service person at home. We went through like making coffee, or even just like showing up early. I tried to get involved with it too. I started planning meetings, which like make sure that I had to be there at the right time every week. And that's totally different, like just showing up to the meeting and all the chairs are set up and posters on the wall, and I didn't even realize there were people doing that. I just thought those things happened in the industry. And what happened through these processes of doing service and doing all these things is when I came to AA, I was coming from like this, and I was figuring, you got 20 years, you got 2 days, you got, you've been here forever. I just like made all these assumptions, and I thought it was your bad meeting. And I started doing service work, and it wasn't long before I thought it was my meeting, but then it turned into our meeting. And the only reason that happened is because, getting involved. And a lot of that was just, taking the extra and following the example of the people. That's the thing I love about it, is that I don't have to make up anything. It's all here in front of me. Even if I can't get it, like, all from my sponsor or his, his examples all over it, or, how to live a productive life. And I talk about, being in school and being a first student and being at HBC forever, and I was at USF for a while. And after I was over for just a short time, I went back to school. And even then it was hard because I had such poor study habits. But after a while, talk stuff talks about practicing principles and all that stuff. It's not about like coming to the rooms and I'm all nice and I smile at you guys and then, I can't tell my teacher, I wasn't here last class, and I don't have my papers, but I'm still there today. The teacher just doesn't, take that. I have to, actually be a member of the class and be a student. Slowly, I, learned that skill, and I actually just graduated last Friday, which is, two weeks from now, because I've been doing that for, half an hour for 13 minutes, so it's a huge accomplishment for me. I'd be already sold out of school if I didn't have this thing. What else is going on in my life? I didn't work for, most of my life I did not work. I had my family, pay for everything. Not even falling into sobriety. I recently got a job, and that's been pretty awesome because it's actually something I want to do. The only reason I got it, anybody that knows me knows I wasn't really looking for a job. The job just kind of happened. It's harmless. I was not seeking out a job. It just kind of showed up. And the reason it showed up is because a lot of those people I've met through these rooms, and just have known for a while and just seeing how I am. What I find is when I live this way of life, things pop up. You can call it God, you can call it higher power, call it whatever you want, but if I'm doing these things, they pop up. I'm also a part-time caretaker, and I've always had a severe mental illness, so that's where I'll for what I've been doing a lot of. I learned how to practice these things and comfortable to know these things, because sometimes I want to train them, but you know, that's not how I'm supposed to live here. Those things combined, the manifestation.